whereas the women will not be given such a blessing.
Another way that we can answer this question is by referring to another verse of the Holy Quran, which says, "Wazawajnahum bihurein." Right. So in this verse, it's necessary to analyze this verse and see what the word hurein is. When we analyze this from a linguistic point of view, we say that the word hur is the plural of ahwar, and also the plural of hawra. The word ahwar means a man with beautiful black eyes, and the word hawra refers to a woman with beautiful black eyes. And at the same time, the word in is the plural of ayun, which means a man with big eyes, and also the plural of ayna, which refers to a woman with big eyes and big beautiful eyes. So there's no reason to say that this word specifically refers to wives and not husbands. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Aga, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Seven barometric pressure.
We come to you, and O God, knowing that thou art our only King.
You're listening to the program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with Brother Yasser Ibrahim.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. The Muslim world is very diverse, and also there's a scale of Muslims. What I mean by this is that you have Muslims who are really good, regardless of the madhab or the school of thought that they follow. And then you have the vice versa of those Muslims who are really bad, and also, you know, regardless of the madhab that they follow. So the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners today is a book that deals with the Ja'fari school of thought in particular, but also trying to show that, you know, there is a place for coming together, for tolerance, for cooperation. It is a very small book, but it's a book that is worth reading. You know, it gives a good overview of the school of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, or as the author puts it, the Ja'fari school of thought. And also in this particular time of ours, where there are so many interactions globally, and, you know, it's very easy for somebody to be misled by certain things they see on the internet or by certain things that some people say, this is a good reference to have by saying, okay, no, you know, one of the things that we should learn is that if we want to know something, we should go and ask the people who are following that particular sect or that particular school of thought. And we don't come with up. Rather, we should not make our own conclusions based on our own understanding of what we have read. No, go and ask. So, inshallah, in our next segment, we hope to introduce this book to the audience, and we hope that it will benefit them. So, inshallah, please stay tuned.
Why do we read books in the first place? What are books good for?
We read books because we don't want to reinvent the wheel, if you will.
We'd better take advantage of human cultural and intellectual heritage, particularly related to our daily activities, such as our physical, mental, spiritual, or even religious health.
We can't ignore the past thoughts and experiences. To do so, we need to boost our bookshelf.
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. So without further ado, the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners today is titled The Truth As It Is. This book was written by
Ayatollah Sheikh Jafar Al-Hadi, Marhum Rahmatullah Alayh. Just a very brief explanation of who he was, that the Ayatollah was an expert in various Islamic sciences, and he has many books, and he has worked, a long time with the Ahlul Bayt Wal Assembly, and also their book council. He was born in the city of Karbala, Iraq, in the year 1946, and he passed away not too long ago, about a year or so ago, in December of 2020, in the holy city of Qom. So this book was published by the Ahlul Bayt Wal Assembly Publishing and Printing Center, which is in the city of Qom in the Islamic Republic of Iran. It was translated by Badr Shaheen, and it's a very small book. It is not very large. It contains in different, parts and portions where a person can go and find out about the school of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim assalam. And as the author writes, he says, the present book is a fresh breath for all of us by giving us a clear picture of the main doctrines and religious injunctions of the Ja'fariyya Imamite Shi'i or Shia, whose individuals live together with their brethren from the various Muslim sects. They are deeply concerned about maintaining the entity and dignity of Muslims and are ready to sacrifice everything for it. So this is what the book tries to do, as mentioned previously. It tries to, first of all, explain the Ja'fari school of thought. Again, very briefly, it does not go into much detail. Regardless, it's a baseless book, like kind of bullet pointing the beliefs. And after that, it goes into saying that, okay, this is how we can tolerate and cooperate with, or our beliefs rather, regarding toleration, cooperation, and the other religious schools of thought. So, inshallah, in our next segment, we'll be reading a section of this book for the benefit of our dear brothers and sisters. So, inshallah, please stay tuned.
Among the sacred texts we have received to help us understand where we came from and where we are going as a human race are most rich in helping us find our direction. They narrate stories of our past, but where have they brought us? Where are their messages now? Are we the people of belief, or have we become the people of the boxes? Is there wisdom trapped in our bookshelves? Bookshelves, bookshelves, bookshelves.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. The book that we have introduced in this program is titled Truth As It Is. It's written by the late Marhum Sheikh Ayatollah Jafar Al-Hadi, Rahmatullah Alayh, and translated by Badr Shaheen and printed by the Ahlul Bayt Wal Assembly in the city of Qom. So as mentioned, this book is an attempt to outline very briefly the beliefs of the Shia or the Ja'fari Shia. And the reason why the author may have mentioned the term Ja'fari, because we know in history there were many other Shi'i schools of thought, like the Ismailiyya or the Kaysaniyya and so on and so forth. So maybe that is why he mentioned the word Ja'fari there in particular. But anyway, the author, in continuing and in the very beginning in terms of this coexistence, and so he writes that when Islam dawned, peoples were so disunited that they ignored each other. Furthermore, they were involved in conflicting and wrangling against each other. With the spread of Islam among these peoples, ignorance of each other turned into mutual acquaintance, rivalry into cooperation, and disassociation into reciprocal relations. This change is one of the blessings of the monotheistic precepts of Islam, which was the prime motive of the emergence of a great united nation that introduced to the world a magnificent culture and protected its individuals from the evils of oppressors and tyrants, and succeeded to win the world's respect and become become the object of veneration in the eyes of all despots and arrogant rulers. This is written under the verse where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the 49th chapter of the Holy Quran, the 13th verse, we have made you tribes and families that you may know each other. So this is the author, and this is his attempt to kind of show unity by first of all explaining the beliefs of the Ja'fari Madhab, explaining the beliefs with regards to cooperation and so on, and then to say, okay, where can we unite, where can we live as a people in peace and harmony. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala firstly to send his mercy on the author who served Islam very diligently and very sincerely. And we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to make us of those who benefit from his writings and who benefit Islam and who do read for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Inshallah, until our next episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Bookshelf with Brother Yasser Ibrahim on RIB English Radio.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Welcome back, everyone. So before we go, let's recite a salawat, everyone. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum. So, dear Muslim brothers and sisters, we are, as we said, okay, we want to practice one of the surahs of the Holy Quran with the rules and the points that we have learned so far from the beginning of these classes up to now. So like the rules of Fatha, Kasra, Dhamma, how to say them. Fathatain, Kasratain, Dhammatain, Alif Maddi, Waw Maddi, Ye Maddi, okay? And also Tashdeed, Sukoon, Qalqala. All these rules that we have studied so far, we will inshallah apply on the Surah Tush-Shams, page 595, Surah Ash-Shams, Wash-Shamsi, Wadduhaha. And the students who are here from Sevier International School, inshallah, all together we will repeat and practice them. Ready, everyone?
Yes.
So, Muslim brothers and sisters, open page 595 of the Holy Quran and be with us, okay? Inshallah, till the end of our class. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. Repeat.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
So any of those rules, okay, that you see, that you remember, okay?
Apply.
When we apply, okay? So tell me what rule it is. Okay? والشمس وضحاها
والشمس وضحاها.
Let's once read all the surah, then we will come back, okay?
والقمر إذا تلاها
والقمر إذا تلاها
والنهار إذا جلاها
والنهار إذا جلاها.
ما شاء الله. والليل إذا يغشاها
والليل إذا يغشاها
يغشاها.
Yeah. والسماء وما بناها
والسماء وما بناها
والأرض وما طحاها
والأرض وما طحاها
ونفس وما سواها
ونفس وما سواها
فألهمها
فألهمها
فجورها وتقواها
فجورها وتقواها
قد أفلح من زكاها
قد أفلح من زكاها
وقد خاب من دساها
وقد خاب من دساها
كذبت ثمود بطغواها
كذبت ثمود بطغواها
كذبت ثمود بطغواها
كذبت ثمود بطغواها.
ما شاء الله. Nice. Very good. Allah bless you, inshallah. إذ انبعث أشقاها
إذ انبعث أشقاها
فقال لهم رسول الله
فقال لهم رسول الله
فقال لهم رسول الله ناقة الله وسقياها
فقال لهم رسول الله ناقة الله وسقياها.
أحسنت أحسنت.
فكذبوه فعقروها
فكذبوه فعقروها
فدمدم عليهم ربهم بذنبهم فسواها
فدمدم عليهم ربهم بذنبهم فسواها.
أحسن. Again, again. فكذبوه فعقروها
فكذبوه فعقروها فدمدم عليهم ربهم
فدمدم عليهم ربهم
بذنبهم فسواها
بذنبهم فسواها
ولا يخاف عقباها
ولا يخاف عقباها.
ما شاء الله. Thank you so much. God bless you, inshallah. Now let's come back to the first verse. Let's see what rules have we studied.
Sir.
One more important point, okay, that we studied, but I forgot to tell you before, that was about the pronunciation of the letters,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in this surah, we have a lot to do, okay? Okay.
Yeah, sleepy. Everyone is sleepy, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, everyone is very, very
try not
sleepy.
To nap, okay?
No, here. Today is a very good day.
Okay.
Oh, no, it's the opposite.
It's the opposite. Okay. For I wish a good day, okay, for all of you.
So, I was the only one that recited well with a good voice.
Yeah. I loved it, really.
Hey.
So, okay, dear Muslim brothers and sisters, if you liked the voice of any of us, okay, please write in the comments, okay?
Sir, I don't have any comments.
Sir, please subscribe.
Sir, I read my comment, shall we? For Surat
al-Sham. يبكي يسأل خالقه فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ.
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
So والشمس وضحاها.
والشمس وضحاها.
There's one tashdid, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it means you have to join the previous letter.
The sheen has a tajdeed.
Do not say washamsi, washams. It's wrong.
Washamsi.
Washamsi wa duhaha. Okay, next one. Wa duhaha. So what rule you apply?
Pronunciation
of? Okay. So the pronunciation of blood, yeah? Your tongue, okay, you have to bring your tongue, okay? It should touch the upper side of your mouth. Upper side.
Yes, yes, it's supposed to touch your upper side. Of your front teeth, it's supposed to touch.
Yeah, at the back of your front teeth, yeah? Upper ones.
والضحاها.
No. Your tongue should not be clear, okay? We don't have to see your tongue. It has to be hidden, okay, down there. Inside your mouth. والضحاها. Like what?
Why'd you say والضحاها?
Like a heavy doll. Like a heavy doll.
We have here alif and again.
So did you get how to say dad?
Yeah.
Say not the side of your mouth, okay? Yeah. Great. Wadduha. So the next letter is ha. Practice ha.
Ha.
Yeah, we had two types of ha, right, Mahdi?
Ha.
How many?
Yes,
we use your throat.
Sir, the
starts with halwa, no.
Sir, the halwa.
It starts in halwa word.
Sir, the dad is written on top of the ha. For some reason, I don't know.
No problem. It's the writing style.
What?
Okay.
Ah, yes. Forgive them. Put a ha and
forgive them, please. Sahar. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Sahar. So look, it is a bit complicated because we have three letters. Okay, that we have to pay attention to the pronunciation. All those three pronunciations of all those three. Okay, like duha ha. Look. Duha ha.
Duha ha.
Yeah. The second ha is the soft ha. Yes?
Ha. There's a hot and there's a ha.
Yeah.
The ha is a very
listen
heavy
to Mahdi.
Okay. So when you pronounce duha ha, you don't pronounce it duha ha. That's wrong. Duha and then ha. The ha, the end in the ha is very,
great,
very soft.
Great. The first ha is
very, very sharp. I knew that.
The first ha is the heavy ha.
Yes, the rough ha.
The second one is the light one. The soft one or the light one. Duha.
Duha.
Duha. So how about alif mad? Yeah, how about alif mad? Do we have here?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we have
this. Duha.
Please stop saying
duha. Duha.
Duha.
Yeah. So let's recite it with me. Okay, after me. Repeat after me. We have alif maddi. Duha ha. Budha has an alif maddi. Okay. Wait. So listen and repeat. Mahdi, can you read this ayah? No, the first ayah.
والشمس وضحاها.
Ahsan. Everyone.
Easy.
والشمس وضحاها. Okay. ضحاها. Sound. MashaAllah. So, look, this is a surah. Look, it is very nice. This is a surah that in any of this ayah, if you look, okay, at the end of every ayah, you have this alif maddi. Look.
Jallaha.
So the Alif Lam doing all of them.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Why?
So let's go to the next ayah.
Do I recite all the ayahs and they repeat after me?
Yeah.
So every ayah have to.
Every ayah.
Yeah, yeah.
Ayah to ayah. Ayah.
That is the beauty of the Quran, look.
Yeah.
That's
so
the beauty of
it. Every ayah have alif. And do I read?
It is having like rhyming words. Do you remember?
And see, okay, and yes, all of them ends with
alif. Alif.
So let's go on. Yeah. So let's go on. Recite. والقمر إذا تلاها
والقمر إذا تلاها.
He said one.
No, I did not say one. Yeah, you said.
One.
You said one.
Next. Say it again. والنهار إذا جلاها. The previous verse.
What? You're saying to recite.
Yeah, the previous verse.
It's not a... read
before
it. You said. Before I heard Mahali. You.
Yeah, me too. Okay, I'm going to restart
the second
ayah.
The second ayah. Repeat it.
You don't say that.
You say that. He's
doing the third ayah. That's why.
I said one nahari.
The second ayah.
Say the second
ayah.
I'm not saying what. You're saying one.
Okay, yeah, say it, Mahdi. Mahdi, say wal.
Wal.
Okay, now qamari.
Qamari idha talaha.
Okay.
Say again now.
So the point is enough.
Okay, but the third ayah. Guys, listen.
The third ayah has, but not the second one.
The third ayah has a one because the first one.
I'm enjoying the discussion. It's very nice.
But the second one don't. You say the second one won.
No. Listen. The elif and the lam, you don't read them.
Now the students are teachers, and I'm enjoying their discussion. Go on.
The elif and the lam, you don't recite them.
No, they recite.
No, when you recite a bit of beautiful voice, you turn lam to
noon. But the third one did.
Yeah, you
listen
did.
To teacher Minhal Hussein. Listen to teacher Minhal Hussein. What do you say?
You become a teacher.
I'm enjoying, really. I love it. Because you've learned the rules and now you're discussing. This is very good. I love it. Yeah? MashaAllah. Okay, thank you so much. I really give thanks to first Allah Almighty. Then, really, it's a pleasure.
Then Sayyid Muhammad Yahya Jafari, then not Minhal
Hussein. Yeah, I give thanks to... IR.
I'm going to push you into that waterfall.
IRIB English Radio, and also Sevier International Schools Network. And also the students of Sevier International.
Yeah,
me. Let's recite as salawat. Thank you so much for joining us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil
farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools. فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Midstream.
The number of recent attacks against U.S. occupation forces and their deployment sites in Syria and Iraq has increased significantly in an actual translation of the concept of resistance against the American occupation. a concept which Damascus announced its support for on many occasions and which the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, reiterated in his last speech on the occasion of the martyrdom of the two leaders, Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Over the past 2 weeks, the locations of U.S. forces have been the aim of frequent operations, as several bases have been targeted with rocket-propelled grenades and drones, including Conoco, Al-Umar, and At-Tanf. These areas mainly constitute incubators for terrorist factions headed by Daesh, which Damascus accuses Washington of supporting to launch attacks on Syrian army positions in the Syrian desert known as Badia. The large extension and geographical spacing of the targeted sites indicates the extent of the spread of the resistance forces, which carry out their operations in a flash to avoid slipping into a direct confrontation. The continuous attacks on U.S. bases, a number of which are located in areas far from residential areas, makes it impossible to monitor them accurately, especially in light of complete Western media blackout and the security and military cordon that surrounds these bases. At a time when other attacks on sites close to residential areas or large attacks that reverberate to distant places reveal the continuity and diversity of the attacks. In the meantime, while Uncle Sam has been constantly denying that any of his sites have been targeted, claiming the sounds of explosions heard in the area surrounding these bases are military drills. During the past week, the so-called International Coalition executed several operations targeting what it deemed to be missile launch sites. The escalation of the resistance attacks in Syria is accompanied by an increase in the movement of American forces on the ground and the return of American political activity to the Syrian arena after a period of stagnation and uncertainty, which was also paralleled by the return of Daesh activity, which Washington uses as a pretext for its continued presence in Syria. It was noticeable in the attacks launched by the resistance forces, in addition to the wide geographical area they now cover, their focus mainly on consistency, which aims to ensure instability on the one hand and increase pressure on the American forces, making their stay in Syria exhausting and detrimental. Such a strategy may constitute a decisive factor in prompting the U.S. to withdraw, even if it takes more time to get there, simply because relying on constant attacks means waging a war of attrition, in a situation radically different from the previous years, during which Washington was immune and far from being targeted. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Still vulnerable, and we must take this threat seriously. With these words, the Pentagon summarized the situation in the areas of deployment of U.S. occupation forces in Syria and Iraq at a time when Washington began carrying out attacks on what it said were missile launch sites at its bases. It is apparent through the acceleration of the attacks and the expansion of their targeting that the resistance forces have begun a new phase of their operations aimed at increasing the level of risk for the Americans in the event they decide to stay in Syria after they decided to resume their military and political activity there. It is true that this path is not new, but recent developments indicate that there is vigorous effort being directed against the Americans, which during the past year amounted to more than 10 in Hasake and Deir ez-Zor, while it seems that it will exceed this number in less than a month this year, if it actually continues at this new pace. To discuss this issue with us from Damascus is retired Syrian Army General and political analyst, Mr. Mohammed Abbas. Well, Mr. Mohammed, thank you for being with us now. Coinciding with the second anniversary of the assassination of the dual leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Deputy of the Popular Mobilization Forces, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, we have what is now known as the Popular Resistance renewing its targeting of U.S. occupation bases in Syria, forcing the Americans to withdraw from At-Tanf base into Jordan in fear of being targeted. How do you assess such an achievement?
Thank you very much. Actually, when we talk about Soleimani, military Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, we should remember that despite their militarism, they will be able to continue their business in the theater of war. Actually, through the continuation of the popular resistance and the front confront the occupation targeting American bases, preventing them from any stability in Syria and Iraq, exposing the state of fear experienced by American forces in Syria and Iraq, and forcing them to temporarily maneuver part of their forces towards Jordan, which is an evidence of the American inability to confront the resistance forces. Military American leaders predict that the attacks against their occupied forces are going to be increased much more. That is why America is going to change its troops, instead of the American nationality soldier, changed it by the American proxy armies, which consists of ISIS and Al Qaeda and Nusra and other troops, what called the Islamic groups. Indeed, they are the Arab version of Blackwater, the American security company. That is how USA avoids loses among the there's no soldiers loses from the American nationality, but only you can say the loss of the casualties. More all casualties nowadays are being in the proxy armies, from what called the American proxy armies, actually.
The resistance fighters not only targeted the U.S. occupation bases of Conoco and Al-Shaddadi on New Year's Eve with several mortar and rocket-propelled grenades, but they did it again by targeting the largest American base in Al-Umar oil field in Syria. Do you expect an increase in anti-American operations in Iraq, as is in Syria, or was that latest around only linked maybe to the second anniversary of the martyrdom of the two leaders?
Thank you. Certainly the memory of the mercenaries Soleimani and al-Muhandis is so precious to the Syrian and Iraqi people, but the military operations against the occupation forces are going to be continued against the American occupation in many shapes, not only one by targeting using the rockets or artillery, but there are other types in the targeting in the oil fields, targeting in the military bases, targeting on the side roads, using mines, snipers, using many types of the of obstacles against that American forces. But I'd like to tell you something, maybe or at least know that American soldiers American nationality soldiers are using helicopters to move from point to others. But the proxy armies, soldiers or warriors, the American proxy warriors used to use the vehicles and land transportation. Why? To avoid the bombside explosions or other things. By the way, Syrian and Iraqi citizens will not allow the American forces to continue their practices on our land. They are going to go on for in their resistances. But I'd like to say that despite the resistance is still growing, but the American analysts predict a complex, coordinated, and deliberated attacks and sophisticated strikes. Resistance is becoming more accurate, more effective, and a spate of escalation in attacks are happening daily. They are using bomb sites, as I said, and rose mines and other weapons. You can use a stone, you can use a stick, you can use the situation of our Syrian people in many villages and many towns who prevent Americans from passing during the streets or the village. It is a sign or a thing to see or to say that we will not allow Americans to stay in our land free.
Well, Mr. Muhammad, it is evident that the resistance factions have pushed the Americans to evacuate Al-10th base, as we said at the beginning of the show, but this act actually shows how the Americans are unable to impose any new battlefield equations here. But it gives me a bit of a concern here. There is Syrian general concern that the U.S. might retaliate militarily to attempt to protect its occupation forces in Syria. How do you think that would be possible?
Of course, Syrian people is supporting the. First of all, Syrian people are supporting the public resistance movement, which poses high combat capabilities that emerged through this. Using artillery, mortars, rocket artillery, and other means, with the ability to make serious strategic and high precision of using drones in injury. The American concern about the increase of in operation is clear, and the base temporary evacuation is the evidence of that. Emphasizing that the Americans are retaliating Syrian forces. They are retaliating Syrian forces, actually, daily. They not we are waiting them, but they use it daily to retaliate from Syrian by how? By using the employing proxy armies or by itself through the exchanging rules between the American and Turkish and Israeli forces by itself or by the proxy warriors. How we can explain, how you can understand the Israeli targeting or strikes, continuous strikes against Syria and the Turkish occupied wide areas in southern of Syria, and the what's about the Syrian defense, what the Syrian defense forces, SDF. It is another type of ISIS. Mm-hmm. What called SDF is another type of ISIS, another type of proxy American armies. So I'd like to remember or to say that Americans troops, American jet bombed Syrian forces in Al-Tarda on 2016, and I think
killing by more than 100 Syrian Arab Army soldiers. We remember that very well, and we will never forget that, actually, Mr. Muhammad. I want to thank you very much. Sadly, that's all the time that we have, but I promise that we will have you again to talk more about how the Syrian population is refusing to have occupation, any kind of occupation, on its land. I want to thank you very much, Syrian Army General, retired Syrian Army General and political analyst, Mr. Muhammad Abbas Muhammad, for joining us. Thank you for your time. Now, please stay tuned, because next we will be talking about how Palestinians are facing Israeli bullets on a daily basis in the West Bank.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Palestinian Bakir Hashash, 21 years old, was killed by the Israeli occupation in the occupied West Bank early on Thursday as the occupation entered an area east of the northern city of Nablus to make administrative arrests. Meanwhile, 24 Palestinians were wounded by Israeli bullets during clashes that took place in several areas across the occupied West Bank, trying to condemn the illegal settlements. The center of Hebron has been witnessing almost weekly activities rejecting the occupation and settlement building, which the occupation forces confront by firing live and rubber bullets and tear gas canisters. The occupation forces continue their attacks against the Palestinians after launching a massive campaign of raids in the West Bank, especially in Bethlehem, Halhul, and Jenin. Palestinians face Israeli bullets in the occupied West Bank in this following report.
Israeli occupation forces continue to assault Palestinians in various cities and villages of the occupied West Bank. The Israeli operation saw the occupation launch a large-scale raid campaign in the occupied West Bank, especially in Nablus, Beit Lahem, Halhul, and Jenin, leading to the death of 21-year-old Bakir Hashash and wounding scores others. Palestinian natives responded to the attacks by retaliating with rocks against the illegal colonial settlers, especially near the town of Tekoa, southeast of Bethlehem. Young Palestinian youth also resorted to targeting a settler bus near Halhul, north of Hebron, with Molotov cocktails to pressure Israeli forces out of their towns. Palestinian media also stated that occupation forces deployed heavily in the Bir Ayyub neighborhood, the entrance to Ain al-Lawza and Al-Ain Street in the town of Silwan, adding that the forces set up roadblocks, closed the streets of Bir Ayyub, attacked the neighborhood with multiple grenades, and arrested two young men, Mundir Ruwaidi and Ihab Abu Sneina. As if the Israeli aggression was not enough, the Palestinian Authority's security apparatuses took matters into their own hands, arresting the son of prisoner Zakaria al-Zubaydi, Muhammad al-Zubaydi, along with some of his companions. However, due to the intensity of the situation, the Palestinian Authority was pressured to release Muhammad al-Zubaydi at Saturday dawn, just hours after detaining him in Jenin-occupied West Bank. Muhammad al-Zubaydi, Ayham al-Saadi, and Aws al-Shalabi were released following intense calls to simmer down the situation in the Jenin refugee camp. Public resentment is on the rise against the Palestinian National Security Services in the Jenin camp, with the camp's residents opening fire against the district headquarters, infuriated by the continuous Palestinian Authority crackdown on residents of the camp, especially after a video went viral showing the Palestinian National Security Services inhumanely assaulting and arresting Muhammad al-Zubaydi in Jenin. The use of violence, severe beating, and human rights violations when done by the Zionist entity are clear acts of occupation against native Palestinians. However, when done by the Palestinian Authority, are nothing but shameful, reoccurring phenomena in Palestine. Not so long ago, activist Nizar Banat was killed due to the use of violence and severe trauma. The same could have happened to Muhammad al-Zubaydi if the batons had hit the young man in the head. This violence only reflects the security apparatus's incompetence, weakness, divergence from the values of Palestinians, and lack of respect for their dignity. This physical violence will only result in counter-violence and hatred, yet sadly the lack of accountability will simply exacerbate such a crackdown.
Well, to discuss this issue with us from Ramallah is Dr. Nimr Saad, academic at Bir Zeit University and political analyst. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Saad. Dr. Saad, 22-year-old Palestinian Bakir Muhammad Musa Hashash was shot in the head after the Israeli occupation forces entered Blata refugee camp east of Nablus city to make administrative arrests late last week. Bakir is not the first nor the last to be martyred at the hands of the Zionist occupation forces, but it seems that fire is raging in the West Bank, this time much different than any other time before. Why do you think that?
Well, it's quite sure for us that the Israeli had ended the last year by killing Hashash, but not that to stop anyway. By the beginning of this year also, the escalation is so high in the Israeli troops against the occupation troops and the settlers against the Palestinians. It's quite clear that there is a kind of an escalation in the last year and all over. Last year, 2021, till today, it's quite obvious that the settlers are trying to gain time as much as they could, since the American administration are not interested so far in the Middle East issue, and they are focusing more on the Iranian issue, on Russia and on China, rather than the Middle East. And I think that the Israeli and the settlers particularly, and especially the government, because this government, the Israeli government, is a settler government, are trying to gain the time and try to make facts on the ground that would be very hard to reverse. Because of that, they are trying to grab as much land as they could. They are trying to escalate the confiscation of land, building settlements and enlarging existing settlements. All that was in a kind of a campaign against the Palestinians in the last year.
Well, that's sums up the fear of the Zionist entity from what might actually come out of the West Bank, despite the fact that the West Bank may have been the last Palestinian region to join the massive popular uprising against the Sheikh Jarrah evictions and then the Saif al-Quds operations back in May. But today, it remains the only area where resistance protests continue to flare up against the Israeli occupation and its illegal settlement building. How do you assess these developments in light of an actual possible Israeli incursion into the West Bank?
Well, I would tell you that the West Bank, especially in the last week, there was, you know, a kind of a mini intifada, I would call it. It was all over the West Bank. It was in Beit Umar and in Susia, in Yatta, both in Hebron. It was in Kufr Qaddoum, in Qalqilia. It was in Tkur, in Beit Lahem. It was in Jabal Sabih, in Nablus, and in Sebastian Nakura, also near the settlement called Shavi Shamron on the road between Nablus and Jenin. It was all over the West Bank. There were clashes with the settlers and the clashes with the Israeli army, and the Palestinians were trying even to cut the roads for the settlers, as far as the settlers are doing every when and while. So the Palestinians now, they are taking the decision to cut the roads for the settlers. However, there is a kind of a popular resistance among the Palestinians, especially in the West Bank. But we can say that this is not enough. And this is, let me say, in a minimal situation, and we need to escalate the popular resistance and all other kind of resistance, not only the popular.
Well, 100%, I definitely agree with what you're saying, but sadly, the Palestinian National Security Services are not giving the West Bank any slack either. I mean, the continuous crackdown against Palestinian activists is on the rise, like we just saw last week with Mohammed al-Zubaydi, son of one of the Freedom heroes, Zakaria Zubaydi, being beaten up and arrested like he was a thug, with video documenting this horrific assault. Although he was released later on Saturday because of all the continuous pressure, it's still physical violence that will only result in counter-violence. Why is the Palestinian Authority adamant on going down the road of violence against its own people?
Yeah, we are getting now into totally another area here, let me say, where when we talk about the Palestinian resistance, we mean that all kind of resistance for the Palestinian people should be allowed, and Palestinians have the right to resist the occupation in any way they find it appropriate. That was according to the 1982 resolution in the United Nations. Mm-hmm. Now, the Palestinian Authority, and particularly President Mahmoud Abbas, he believed from the very beginning in a non-violence line of resistance. Because of that, the orders for the security forces, in Palestinian security forces, is to stop any kind of violence and to maintain only popular, as they call it, peaceful resistance to the occupation. And at the same time, they are continuing with the cooperation with the Israelis, and especially in the security coordination, which also came as a hard grab against the Palestinian resistors who are trying, you know, to do sometimes some operations. We believe, as Palestinians, that most of the Palestinians believe that the Israeli occupation is an act of violence, as I would put it, as exactly Franz Fanon had put it. Any occupation is an act of violence, and we need to react in also an, a violence way. That's the only way to resist this occupation. Yes, I believe in the popular resistance and the both intifadas, the first one and the second one. It started as a popular resistance by the Palestinian people, but at the same time, we do need all kind of other sorts of resistance to exist, and the Palestinian Authority is committing a huge mistake by preventing Palestinians from practicing their own resistance. Now, that would come to an end, which would, might be, you know, very bad, especially that the Israeli occupation and settlers are continuing on a daily basis in, you know, attacking the Palestinians and grabbing the land. And what is the answer by the Palestinian Authority? It's just, you know, trying to calm down the situation and try to say, yeah, we will resist by the popular resistance. This is not enough. And we believe that sooner or later, and what happened yesterday or the few days ago, Friday, on Jenin, as the incident that you mentioned, that the Palestinian resistors, they started even shooting at the Al-Muqata'a, at the headquarters, the Palestinian headquarters of the security forces in Jenin. And today everyone was commenting on that, is showing that if the Palestinian Authority is continuing with this kind of line, in not attacking the Israeli troops and allowing the settlers in doing so without any kind of resistance, definitely the Palestinians are going to go further in their resistance.
Definitely. When they see that there is no real resistance on the ground, they will make their own way to resist. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Nimr Saad, academic at Bir Zeit University and political analyst, for joining us to talk about the latest very risky situation in the West Bank, with all hopes and support for the Palestinian people, for academics like you, and for the youth like those who are resisting this Zionist aggression. I want to thank you very much. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for your time. Please stay tuned next week on the Middle East Stream. Salam.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, verses 17 through 21 of Surah Shura, or Ash-Shura, gives us some very important fundamental points for us to understand and take on board in our day-to-day lives, in our overall decision for life, in every decision we make. Read verse 19 and then 20. These are again very important verses. I hesitate to discuss these verses, because I feel that some of us will be thinking this is redundant. Some of us will be thinking, okay, you know, it's there. Tell me of history. This little thing that happened. Did Aisha do this? Did Yazid do that? Did, who cares? تِلْكَ أُمَّةٌ قَدْ خَلَتْ لَهَا مَا كَسَبَتْ وَعَلَيْهَا مَا اكْتَسَبَتْ. A lot of times our references to these historic accounts is ridiculous. It's not to learn anything. No, this guy said this is the detail, that guy said this. Which one is it? Who cares? The Quran, when there's disputes between the followers of the Prophet and the Jews or the Christians about these were great prophets. These were great prophets, right? These were great prophets. But then there were disputes. And God says, that was a verse of the Quran that I read. تِلْكَ أُمَّةٌ قَدْ خَلَتْ لَهَا مَا كَسَبَتْ. The Quran doesn't address which one of them is right. He says, what's your issue with that? تِلْكَ أُمَّةٌ قَدْ خَلَتْ. That is a nation they have passed on. لَهَا مَا كَسَبَتْ وَعَلَيْهَا مَا اكْتَسَبَتْ. For it is what they earned, what they did for themselves. And whatever they did wrong is their business. Don't busy yourself with these things. Don't ruin your lives with this thing. These are important teachings. The Quran repeatedly mentions them. We don't repeat it as much as the Quran tells us to repeat. And because of that, we don't adopt this ideology. Let me read it before. That first line was very important, very fundamental. One of the lines that is haq and mizan, that's related to a large portion of our lives, is this verse 19. Allahu latifun bi'ibadih yarzuqu man yasha'. God is the one who has mercy towards his ibad. He grants rizq and sustenance to whomever he wishes. This is the truth.